Salam, everyone. Before we begin this session, let's all close our eyes and take a moment to clear our minds, bring ourselves completely to this moment, and focus on the Lord. Today, we have the wonderful blessing of having Maitreya himself, God is with him, in the room. Other names and titles given to him include the Kalki Avatar, the Christ, the Mehdi, he whom God shall make manifest, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the true white brother from the east, the seventh angel, and many others. He is the representative of the one true God on earth, come to reveal the mystery of God, unify the religions of the world and humanity, and bring the kingdom of heaven on earth, as has been prophesied. He will be available for the next 2 hours to answer questions on all aspects of his teachings. We did ask that people send in their questions beforehand, and some have been sent in. Therefore, some of these questions will be answered first, before Maitreya begins answering questions from the room. The questions sent in that are not answered today will be answered in the second session with Maitreya, on Tuesday, October 6th, again from 12 to 2 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. You can still send in questions for that second session to questions@maitreya.org. Now, before we begin, please listen carefully to these guidelines of room conduct. To ask a question of Maitreya, you are expected to have visited the website www.maitreya.org and know the base of his teachings. You can find his answers to hundreds of questions on the website, so if you are new to the mission or have not read our literature deeply, you will likely find your answers there. If you do have a question for Maitreya, please type it in text. If your question is chosen to be answered, a mission representative will read your question, or you may be asked to come to the mic and ask it yourself. After Maitreya finishes answering your question, you may ask a follow-up. Please be courteous and ask only one question at a time. If there are no questions, we will read from mission literature until another question is asked. If you do not follow these guidelines or attempt to grab the mic without Maitreya's permission, you will be red-dotted and/or bounced. Note that this is a public forum, and whatever you say is in public domain. We do record these sessions and broadcast them later, or use them as we see fit. The mic is now released to Maitreya. Please give him your undivided attention and respect. Salam.
Thank you very much, Noor. Welcome everybody to the mission. The sessions are for answering questions, and as Noor said, hundreds of questions, or even more, have been already answered. These special sessions only happen twice a year, that I'll come to the room. I used to come much more, but since the questions were all answered, now I come rarely here. I hope you all have meditated and have gone to the website and have read the teachings that unifies all religions of the world and prepare to come here and ask questions of the highest about what we are doing and how this mission have come about and how humanity is in the brink of the end time, which is the coming of the golden age, and all signs are there and all religion have been telling of this time to come. And I am hoping you are enjoying the Feast of Tabernacle, which is the most joyful and joyous feast of the year, from the seven feasts that God demanded to be kept holy, and enjoy the wonderful energy of God that comes to humanity in a greater degree at this time. I release the mic. Let us hear the first question and see what the answer will be.
The first question. You once said in a satsang, 12/27/88, that laughing is the closest way to pure consciousness. Can laughter be from ignorance, passion, or knowledge? And can you clarify more on the subject of laughter and reaching pure consciousness? All thanks to God.
Great. The question is, if laughter is closest to pure consciousness, our laughters are okay and accepted? Is there laughing that is from ignorance or passion, and which one is from knowledge? Since I have been answering these questions for 30 years, and many of people in this room have been with me all this time, and it's time for them to answer the questions, I refer the questions to the room and see what the people who have been in the mission and know the teachings come up with the answer first before eventually I answer them. So the answer is on the floor. Laughter, closest to pure consciousness. Is all laughters okay? Go ahead. Raise your hand and see what are your answers. Go ahead, Tahira.
Salam Maitreya-ji and everyone. I hope the sound is okay. Since asking the question, of course, I do believe that there can be three kinds of laughter, passion, ignorance, or knowledge. To laugh at something that is not appropriate, or laughing at something that we know is not of the highest, is not right, and to laugh at something from knowledge is good. So I'm just trying to understand the relationship of laughter and reaching pure consciousness. I'm thinking, as it goes beyond when you're in a very high state of consciousness with God, that everything is funny, that funny in the sense that I'm not sure of the word. I don't know what the word would be, but I guess a joy. I think in thinking of a joy.
Very good. Okay. Anybody else? Go ahead, Kiyosha.
Hello. Just expanding on that, I think kind of what it comes down to is the purity of what you're laughing at. There are so many things out there that we can laugh at, but when it's pure and the closer it is to God, then I think the more it is from knowledge, the more it is of the world and of man's humor, then the more it is of ignorance or passion.
Great truth on that. Anybody else want to try? Don't be shy. It's okay. Go ahead, Shakti.
Salam, Maitreya-ji, and everyone. I hope you can hear me. When I thought of that, the answer to the question, and of course I remember when Maitreya-ji did say that, and I've often wondered about it, but never asked more. But when I think of laughter being that state of pure consciousness, when we're in such a state of, say, ecstasy through the laughter, we're not thinking of anything. All we're doing is feeling that joy and that laughter at that moment. And maybe that's might be what the feeling of pure consciousness at that moment would be, just that laughter, of course, laughter in the right way, in a godly way, where you're just not thinking at that moment. But it doesn't mean that we have reached the state of pure consciousness, but we're feeling it at that moment. Thanks, God.
Yes, great. That laughter which brings us to the moment We're not worried about the past, and we're not worried about the future. We become here and now. That's beautiful. Anybody else? Okay. Everything in this universe is three kinds. Everything. There is nothing in this universe is not three kinds. The laughter that we were talking about that is closest to pure consciousness is the laughter which is not in the expense of anyone. It is not from ignorance that we make fun of someone just for the sake of laughter. It's not from passion that we want to kind of put down so we can dominate them. It's from knowledge in an environment that two people are not calculative, but they're friends. Indeed, that kind of laughter only can be found at the kingdom, when the kingdom of heaven on earth comes and people only relate to each other as friends, not calculative, as we have become at this time of human history. We have forgotten to be open and not always calculate in everything we do, in our relationship, in our life, in our conduct or friendship or anything that we do. I have seen such a laughs between people in that village in Iran, that people laughed with such a joy that it seems they have no care in the world. The most beautiful laugh I have seen is from an old man, almost didn't have any teeth at all, but he laughed with such a joy that you had no choice to laugh with him or just love him, because he was so there at that moment. Of course, another meaning of that laugh is closest to the pure consciousness is when you want to meditate, but you can't. You just cannot meditate, you cannot concentrate, you cannot bring your mind to go through the process or concentrating on the mantra. Just start laughing by yourself. It doesn't have to be with anybody else or at anybody else, but a laugh that just personal, repetitive, for a long time. After 5 or 10 minutes of laughing like that, you have no choice but become happy. If you do that among other people, in front of other people, they might start after a while laughing with you, affect them as you laugh. Actually, the first time I saw and realized how it can affect other people and it's contagious was when somebody brought a video to one of our yoga meeting in Mississippi State University, and for around 15 minutes the yogi who was in the tape did nothing but laughed. After 5 minutes of doing that, the whole class started laughing with him. You know, they didn't have any choice. Everybody became very joyous and happy the way he laughed and didn't care about the world, and he was right there in that moment, and you can see that he really doesn't have much problem to think about. But this world that we live in is becoming so calculative and full of problem and unnatural that we have forgotten to create environment or relationships which based on purity and oneness and love of God. And therefore, we have forgotten that kind of laugh. And if you observe many people's life, they laugh very little. They are very serious face and sourpuss. Therefore, they cannot enjoy themselves because they are in trouble financially, they are in trouble physically, they are in trouble mentally, they are in trouble spiritually, they are in trouble in their relationships. They are just in trouble because each person or a small group of the people want to make it by themselves. And therefore, the life become harder and harder and eventually come to the point that you wake up in the morning, run to work, come back home, get something to eat, do a couple of things, go to bed, next day the same thing. The true life, the most natural life, is in the environment that you can provide for yourself and family and the community from your immediate environment, naturally, with the way that it gives you joy to go to work because you love the things you do. You don't do it because you have to. You will work with the people that they are also natural and loving and not calculative and in a lot of problem. And therefore, your relationship become in a deeper level, full of laughter and joy. That kind of laughter and joy is one of the results of the coming of light and the kingdom of God on earth. We cannot have that kind of relationship because we have forgotten. Little by little by little, we became more comfortable. We have more material things. We have a lot of things that our grandparents and many of the people before us even couldn't think to have. But at the same time, every time we have something, we cut ourselves more and more from nature, and we reach a point that we are absolutely disconnected from the essence, and therefore we no longer can laugh or even listen to the nature which laughs. That is the laugh we are talking about. We are talking about a joyous laugh, uncalculative laugh, for the sake of being with each other, loving one another in deepest level possible, without any calculation or desires, but because you are friends, you love one another, and that is very hard to find in this state that we are in. But it's coming. The kingdom is coming, the coming of the time that humanity eventually will realize that they have to share. We are not against technology, we are not against comfort of the life, but at the same time, realizing if you don't share, it affects you more than anybody else. Of course, sharing does not mean I don't have anything and you share everything you got with me. You have to put effort, you have to put your ability into the relationship and creating environment that everybody is comfortable. But learn to share. Find the people they also want to share, and then share with each other. And then you become friends with one another. Then when you joke and laugh and have deeper relationship with each other, you're not afraid that, oh, what is the angle of this person who getting close to me? Does he want something from me? Is trying to take my money, my possession, my material thing, or he wants to tell me what to do or dominate me or whatever the reasons people are afraid of each other these days and they are not completely open to one another will vanish because after a while you trust each other and you can relax and joke and have be funny and have fun with each other and laugh and become close to pure consciousness. So when we are talking about these things, sometimes it is not possible to do it in the environment we have, but in the future when the kingdom comes, I have seen that laugh. I have seen that yogi who laughed for 15 minutes and we start laughing with him. It's contagious. It is meditative. It is be here and now. But if you laugh at someone else to put them down, if you laugh in a way, nothing funny about this situation, then people wondering why you do that. Even in laughing, there is a wisdom and time and place and people involved. Therefore, your answer is yes. There is laughing from the knowledge. There's laughing from passion and from ignorance. And even laughing depends on time, place, and people. I hope that answers your question. If you have a follow-up, Tahira, go ahead. Okay, if there's no follow-up, we go to the next question then.
Question 2. Sages of the past, please elaborate on their history, time period, numbers. How did they achieve sagehood? Will they be part of the communities of light?
Okay, the question is on the floor. Sages on the past. Who were they? How many were there? How they became sages? Will they be in the communities of light? Anybody knows anything about it that can give us some answers? Go ahead, Noor.
Hello. Well, by my understanding, the sages of the past include, of course, the prophets of the past, you know, of all the major religions that are in the greatest sign, as well as the minor prophets, you know, such as Jonah and all of the others in those religions, and anyone else who has been prepared for the last 12,000 years to be reincarnated at this time. So, as I understand it, I think that they would be part of the communities of light, and in fact, they'd probably be the ones that, you know, create the communities of light in the beginning and develop it, that the sages of the past would be reincarnated to be the sages of the present also, or of the future, as is necessary. Thanks, God.
Very good, Noor. Yes, it is, indeed. If we didn't have sages in the past, we wouldn't have the Paraviprasa. If the sages of the past had not had progress, we would not have been here and calling Alex. That's what we're counting on. That's correct, absolutely. Okay, Samuel, you just go ahead and take the mic.
It's my understanding that all actually, to repeat what Noor just said, that all people that reached a higher consciousness and even the highest consciousness will be spewed out of God's mouth to help us and to create communities of light, which is exciting. It's just that I've not been able to find anything to read about them or to really get the, you know, their place in history. So I just assume they came before Abraham and after Noah. But if anybody any literature on them, I'd like to know.
Okay, I don't think we mention who is whom. We have some feelings and understanding of some of the people who come to the mission. After a while, we might understand who they are. Just last night, I was telling somebody that his behavior and the way he acts, he reminds me of Umar in Islam who arguing with Prophet Muhammad and many times even influenced him, and he changed his mind because of Umar. Yeah, I was telling this person that he has the behavior of Umar, and he was very concerned about my safety, and the mission might not be accepted with many people, and they might even not be very happy at all. I was telling him that I had never had any fear in my life, ever, for anything to do, and anything I realize is correct and need to be done, and I'm not going to stop now, and therefore this mission will go on, and my trust is in God and all that. At the same time, it reminds me that when the Meccan wanted to attack Medina, they had created a huge army to come and fight Prophet Muhammad. He actually resisted it. I said, no, I'm not going to fight. I'm a peaceful man, and whatever I'm doing is from God. Therefore, I'm not going to fight them at all. And Umar was really upset about it and started really arguing with Muhammad that, no, he has to do it. You know, they're coming, you know, toward him, and he has no choice. So eventually, of course, a revelation came and said, yes, go ahead and take the sword and fight the Meccans who are coming to fight you. And from there came the concept of jihad. So the idea is the possibility of this person who is pushing me to be more cautious is that he might be Umar. He might be reincarnation of such a person. Of course, he keeps saying, no, no, he's not the one, and all that, which is okay. That's really nice that he has such a humility. He doesn't want to accept that. He says, no, he's just here to serve the mission and all that. But there are some inkling and the way people act. We have had recognized and seen some of them are the incarnation of the people from the past. They are the people God always choose to come join the mission and be part of the God's plan. But we have not made a paper or somewhere in the website make a list out of them and say this person is this person is that, this person is that. Bob did. When he started his mission, he had 18 people joining him, and he believed that they were the 12 Imams, Prophet Muhammad, his daughter Fatima, and the four connection or Babs or doors that were connecting the last Imam to the followers. So he recognized each of them as such and revealed it to them whose incarnation they were. That's interesting because I don't think Baha'is or people who followed Bab believed in reincarnation. And there's right there, Bab says these people have been born as sages of the past and they are here to help me to spread this mission. But in this time, either you are a sage of the past or you're not. It's not really that important to be recognized as the sage of the past. It is not who you say you are. It is not who I say you are. It is what you manifest. God didn't say you know them by what they say they are. God didn't say you know them by what Maitreya says you are. He said you know them by their fruits. Therefore, if you have been sage of the past, you manifest great thing for the mission. You love the revelation and you will be manifesting great things, then we can say, yeah, this person is really manifesting and giving a lot of fruits. Therefore, we can conclude that he's a great soul. Now, how many of them were there? According to Islam, there have been 144,000 prophets who have come to humanity. As Nur said, there have been major prophets which brought the seventh revelation of God, and there have been minor prophets which had very specific task or mission to accomplish. There have been rishis, mahatmas, and many, many other beings in the past that they reached very high consciousness, and some of them even left their body because they reached to a point that the body couldn't hold them anymore because they didn't have any karma. And in Ananda Marga, in the place they have called Ananda Nagar, that they have actually places they have designated of the yogis who through their meditation reach salvation and left their body and reach pure consciousness, or at least they left their body in a very peaceful way, like that American Indian who would say, well, this is a good day to die, and he would go and make his own bed at the top of the tree and meditate there and leaves his body. So it means they're so familiar with their body and they're so attuned to the universe, they know this is the time to live. And therefore, they go and do that. So there are hundreds and thousands and probably millions of great souls that have reached very high consciousness. But there are 144,000 that are amazingly in tune with God's mission, and they are called elect. That is what we are looking for, and we are calling to come and join us. But as Bible said, not only that, but there are millions and millions of others who will support the mission and support the Paraviprasa to accomplish this mission, and they are here as the supporter. And they are also great souls, but they don't have the aptitude, they don't have the ability, they don't have the desire to be a Paravipra, which is a person who absolutely 100% dedicate their life to the mission and come to the mission close to me, and so we can work together to accomplish this mission. How do they relate to the communities of light? Actually, communities of light is the place to create such a being. In the beginning, of course, we will attract these great souls who will come to the mission, who will create the round table, who will create the facilitating body and the facilitating hierarchy. Those who will come, join, help in any way they can, they become great contacts for the mission. They become the light bearers for the mission, and they spread the word and the mission. Eventually, the hierarchy is going to come from the bottom of the society, from the people, by the people, for the people. And when the hierarchy manifests in full manifestation, they will be incarnated to help in any part of the hierarchy possible. The communities of light, their leaders, their judges, they will be great souls. And those who are in the communities of light also meditate, progress, become great souls, even if they are not. Just being in the communities of light, that means you are a great soul. Okay, now, are you a sage? Again, you know them by the fruits. And that is the measure that we use to know who is really a sage, who is a Paravipra, who is a great soul. It's not that I come here and say, I am Maitreya and I am the seventh angel and you should accept me as such. No, I give fruit. I gave revelation. I brought the unification of our religion. I fulfilled many prophecies. These are our fruits that now all of you look at and say, yeah, it makes sense. It has to be from God with so much support and based on the scriptures. Same thing for us looking at you. And God says, you know them by their fruit. And we look at you and say, okay, who gives fruit? Somebody gives fruit and they're manifesting and they're dedicated to the mission 100%. Then we say, oh, this person is an elect. He's been called for to come and join the mission and become a source of manifestation of the mission and spreading of the mission. And eventually people say, yeah, such and such a person knows all the teaching and he's so spiritual and wonderful and have no ego. Then they become great people in the mission and therefore they have manifested and proven they are an elect. Therefore, they will be the one that are going to create the facilitating body. They are the one, they are going to manifest the hierarchy from the comings of light. They are the one that are going to be leaders of the comings of light and create the true hierarchy eventually, which come from the comings of light. And they will be with comings of light and the teaching for the next 1,000 years. Until, of course, the time comes for the second resurrection after this revelation. I hope I answered all questions about the sages of the past. So we are not going to go and identify in a sense that make a list to say this person is that, this person is that, this person is that. It really doesn't matter. Most important is the fruit. If they are the sages of the past, usually they say, no, I'm not, I'm just like a humble person, and therefore become more interested because such a person is so humble that they do not even want to be called a Paravipra or elect or great sage or anything, but they want just to do the will of God. If you have a follow-up, if I didn't answer a part of your question or anything else, go ahead, Samuel.
One of the things that came across my mind after I had written this question was maybe the sundering coming up is really going to be so universal around the world and so gross that in a sense, it's not necessary for the future builders of the communities of light to be here and experience that, and that the main emphasis and growth will come after the sundering occurs. Could you comment on that, please?
Yeah, that's a good observation, actually. It's going to be terrible, and it's not only in Bible that talks about the coming of the destruction and the tribulation and the end time. I have been engrossed into American Indian prophecies for the last couple of months. It started from my brother in Canada who sent me a couple of prophecies of American Indian, and after that just has evolved, and after a while somebody sent me a URL to a page that had huge prophecies from almost all the Native Americans from North and Central and South. And eventually I sat down and wrote some comments on the whole prophecy, which is going to be in our news brief this month. It's amazing how similarities to Bible and Quran and other scriptures that talking about the coming of this tribulation of evil and how amazing the destruction is going to be. and how asleep human is. All the signs have fulfilled, and everything that Native Americans were expecting to happen and being fulfilled is fulfilled. Actually, they're wondering why it's not happening. They're wondering it's late. It should have happened long time ago. They are all waiting for somebody to come. They call it the White Brotherhood from the East before it starts. We might say, oh well, why we have to do anything and wait until the destruction come, and then after that we come together and start the hierarchy or the facilitating body and all that. God is proactive. God is not reactive. He sends this revelation and everything now before the destruction come. Warn people. Call them. Even if one or two souls listen eventually beside the sages of the past and the Parvipras, that is the reward that God will have of being proactive. Therefore, we have to start to create what we preach for the future. It's not for this world, it's not for the system at this time, but for what is coming. We are not competing with any government, we are not competing with any people, we are not competing with any system. Those things are gonna be reaching to a point that most humanity realize that those things are not gonna work. There's another possibility. If we can create the facilitating body fast enough and reach a point that we have enough resources and people and organization and manifestation that we can show humanity that there is another way and bring the kingdom without letting the tribulation come. So we have to do our best. We have to reach out. We have to create the facilitating body. The point is, if human is listening, if human is participating, if the human are able to overcome their ego and their desires and wants and lower natures and fears and all that, and go to the limb, drop everything and say, here I am, what I can do for you, what I can do for God, what I can do for this mission. But of course, if they don't listen, the less they listen, the less they come participate and manifest God's will, the probability and possibility of the tribulation will increase. Another way of looking at it is if find the people who are dedicated to the mission and they are with us and we have the resources, we can actually facilitate to find a lot of things that God has provided and hidden in places that will help bringing the kingdom of heaven by researching and finding those abilities. We might be able to bring the kingdom of heaven without waiting for the tribulation to come. But if we don't have the resources, if we don't have the people, if they are not the kind of the people that will help to bring the kingdom, we have no choice. I can go and search for a lot of things, have to research and find out. I cannot one person do a lot of things need to be done. And few people are in the mission at this time that really are dedicated and manifesting and have dedicated their life to manifest. Therefore, my conclusion is the tribulation have to come. The push have to come to shove before humanity eventually wakes up and say, hey, all these people, all these religions, all this revelation, all this saying of the coming of the tribulation is not just a dream or saying of some crazy spiritual people. Look, God said the seven angels are going to come. The revelation of the seven seals is going to come. God said, you know, all this thing is going to happen. There's going to be seven seals and angel and American Indians, prophecies and expectation all are fulfilled. What am I still doing and, you know, not getting with the work of God and still I'm holding to my you know, little life and afraid of moving around life. That's fine. You can do that. It's not going to hurt me, but it's going to hurt you in the long run, and it's going to hurt humanity. And this is a time of sundering. It's not another church or group or organization that is here to be politically correct or make you feel good. It's here to tell you the truth. And this is the truth. Okay, God sent the seven revelations. God sent the eternal divine path. God sent the seven angels and called humanity to come and join us. And according to the Native American, it has happened four times before. God creates a new man. They become greedy at the end, and he has no choice but destroy them. Just like the flood of Noah. God repented that he created man because they weren't listening to his way of natural way, and therefore he had reached a point, he said, I have enough of this, and he chose few people, and the rest, he wiped them off the earth. Yeah, I can't come here and say, no, be good, love one another, and be happy, and just believe in this name or that name, and just come to my church. I have a pinball machine and all the facilities for your family to be happy. But give me your money. I'm going to make millions of dollars from you. And the people, they are not looking for truth, but they're looking to feel good and stop being good. So this is the time of sundering. This is a call to come and join and do it. And if we being able to attract people we need and people come, we might be able to stop tribulation. But it's up to you. Humans have the free will. So it is not that we should just sit here and wait. We don't have to do anything, and we let the tribulation come and everybody's been destroyed. Then we start doing, we have to do it now. We have to start the process. We have to try our best to avoid and stop the tribulation and turn the human around. Of course, I'm not holding my breath, because what I know about human, they are very fearful and very afraid and very attached and very lot of things that personally it amazes me of the excuses they bring for not following God's will. But this is the truth of it. It's the essence of what is coming. Okay, I know a lot of people say, oh, that's too negative. You know, that creates a lot of fear in me. And don't say this thing. Just tell me I'm okay and everything is fine. Nothing bad is going to happen to me. And you're going to heal me and give me all the goodies I want. But that's not the truth. God didn't say that. God said, turn around, be baptized, be godly. Even he put the fearful in the same level as the warmongers and adulterers and all that. So go to the limb, okay? And let all your fears go and get on with God's work and become one with it. So no, we don't have to wait until the tribulation and destruction comes. The only reason the destruction and the tribulation comes because man chooses wrong way, make wrong decisions. If they choose God and his way and natural way, the tribulation doesn't have to come. They can stop it. It would have been much better for me personally, financially, all that, if I said, oh no, don't worry about it, everything is okay. Just meditate and just send your tithes or send your money and you're going to be okay. No. Tithes is something God said you have to send it. You have to do it. It's not for me. Hopefully, if we can have enough resources to create better videos or reach out to more people, maybe we can get more people. But if we can't, we can't. Of course, my trust is in God. Anyway, so no, we should reach out. We should continue. We should create a facilitating body. We should come and join the mission. And if we are the round table material, You will be invited to join the round table. If you are a person that can manifest great things, you will be respected highly as great souls. Hopefully, eventually, we can create a facilitating body and reach to the bottom of the communities on the world and create the hierarchy, and at the same time, let all the religions and people know that their expectation is fulfilled. It's time for them to recognize that and come and bring the kingdom of heaven on earth. So we have a choice. I hope that answers your question. If you have a follow-up, go ahead. Otherwise, we go to the next question.
This is a new teaching, and I'm new to it. So I'm involving myself in it and learning and growing. And when I reach out to people, and that's to literally everybody I run across, when I get out in the world, which is often, nobody wants to hear it, or nobody follows up. No, I give them the information about Maitreya.org, and nobody seems to follow up. So I have the feeling that I need to prepare myself for after the sundering, when the interest might be greater, or, since I'm an old man, the next lifetime, to prepare myself to dive into the teachings, to explode with them and just be all that this individual consciousness could be, in so that I can assist and be a greater service in the future. So it's, can you comment on that maybe?
Yes, do your best and don't worry about it. It's not really up to you. It's up to God, manifest or not. It's not surprising people not gonna listen. We have been at it for 30 some years. How many people have really heard it? So I'm not surprised that people don't want to listen. How many Hopi people were trying this thing to their people, and even they are losing a lot of young people to Maya and external world, and they have left the natural way and following other ways, and they think they are progressing. Well, in a sense, you can say they should have progressed, but they should not have lost their soul. You should not gain the world and lose your soul. If you gain the world but share it with each other, then you don't lose your soul, because your soul is still is with one another. Again, it goes to sharing, the ability to use the technology and progress with the ability to share with one another. If you don't, then each person become disconnected from the nature and other people, and that brings disease, unhappiness, depression, a lot of other things that related to self-centeredness and selfishness. So do your best, don't worry about it. It's not your fault. If they don't want to hear, go to another person. They don't want to hear, go to another person. Give them the message and leave them to God. Okay, we go to the next question.
Hello, Maitreya-ji and all. I have a question, but don't have a mic. Please talk more on God being proactive and not reactive. Is it fair to say God punishes people, for example, bad things happen to good people? Or are we more subject to the law of karma? And when we break ourselves against, what is the law? We are subject to a reaction to our actions, and therefore we punish ourselves and not God.
The result of our own action? God didn't ask us to be separated from Him at the beginning, but we separate ourselves from Him. There's nothing negative thing comes to us which is from God. All the good things come from God, but anything happens to us that they're not good, it's not from God, it's from us. We have done for ourselves, or it's been done to give us a lesson. A lesson has to be learned, and God put us in such a situations so we can learn and go on with God's thing. Or when He calls us for His work and we resist it, then of course it carries karma. Because if you are not saying, thy will be done, not mine, then you carry karma. That's exactly what karma means. My will, but not thine. And the will of God clearly is being revealed to humanity in this revelation. And that is the creation of the comings of light and the kingdom of heaven on earth and progress toward pure consciousness. And that's why we are here. That's why this creation has been created. And that is the purpose of humanity for being born and having a life. It's not here to become a famous person or gather a lot of wealth or whatever that our heart desires. But what is this creation is being created for? Therefore, we will follow the will of God. If we don't, then we are creating karma and we will pay for it. Or if we are not listening to the call, especially if we have been chosen and God look at our heart and say, your son, your daughter, you can manifest greater things than where you are, but still we resist it. What do you expect? He created the whole universe for this purpose. Turn around the darkness to go to the light. Now the darkness says, no, we still want to go back to darkness. As Christ said, the path is narrow. I always had this vision that there's a path, it's very narrow. The two sides of the path, there are barbed wires. If you go a straight path, you're going to be okay. But if you blind yourself and are in the darkness and you don't know where you go, you're going to hit yourself to these barbed wires and get hurt and bruised and create karma. Those barbed wires are not there to hurt you if you had followed the path. They are there to guide you not to go away from the path, but return back to the center of the path and continue go a straight path to pure consciousness and God. So all the bad things happen to us is because we are not in the center of the straight path, but because we astray to the sides and we are not learning our lessons by the things happen to us and realizing, hey, I have to go to a straight path. I have to follow God. I have to follow the call of God for me. Anytime we tell anybody about the mission and this revelation, they are called to come and join us. Actually, you create a great call to them by telling them about this mission. The moment that happened, they have a choice to come to the straight path or go and hit the barbs or barbed wires. If something happened to the people, they are good people, according to your question. But what does that mean, they are good people? Why? They are good Muslim, they're good Christian, they're good Hindus, they're good Buddhists. Those religions are no longer acceptable by God as being the best. They are here to guide them to this revelation, and this revelation, you are good if you are doing the will of God. And the will of God is, of course, what is the call of this revelation. And also the people you called good might have a lot of karma from the last or previous lifetime, and therefore they are punished for something that they have done before. We have to all recognize what is good, what is bad, what is the will of God, and how our cultures and background have affected us, and we come with these words that they have no meaning anymore after this revelation. Therefore, we have to measure everything according to the revelation of God and teaching. Therefore, our vocabulary and words and everything become more clear to us without being colored with all the thing happened to us in any lifetime. So it's a very complicated thing, but if you create complete dedication and love for the mission and revelation, those things become clearer and revealed to you in a greater degree. I hope that answers your question. If you have a follow-up, go ahead. What's Athena's question?
Shalom all. My question is regarding the current economic situation worldwide. Could this be part of God's sundering?
Absolutely. It's a situation that they don't know what they're doing. Mission have already revealed the reason for it and the cure for it. Everything in this universe has a limit, and financial situation and free economy or market is not any exception. When a market economy reaches to saturation, it no longer can grow. It no longer can expand. And that is the base of business. If you don't expand, you die. Every businessman knows that. That's why you can see they acquire each other. They take over one another, even sometimes in a hostile way, because they know if they don't, they die. Now, their system has reached a saturation. Of course, the amount of the money they throw at it, it might make it to expand a little more for the next couple of years. But when the next saturation comes, no matter how much money they throw at it, even now, no matter how much money they throw at it, is not working as well as they thought it will. Because it can't expand. It's like a balloon. It has a point of saturation. If you put more air in it, it's going to burst. And we have been telling this since this happened, even before that, according to our cyclical movement, the only way to go to the next step is to facilitate the coming of the next period or cycle. They're not doing it. The cyclical movement is something that the economists don't know, the politicians don't know. They think there is only free market or communism or unfree market ideology, and each of them is going to work by itself. It doesn't. Each of them are valid for a period of time, and after that period of time, none of them going to work. That's why Russia fell and became more free market economy, and they don't have as much problem as the rest of the world because their economy is still expanding. But they didn't have any economy before. But they are going to also reach a saturation, and they're not going to be able to expand. And that is the problem with this world. And, of course, the timing is perfect. This will not be healed or taken care of because the period for this system is over. People who are in power and they have the finances, of course, they don't want to let go of the statute code and the ability to be what they used to be, still entice them to push and pull and put the burden in other people and expand, so the rich is going to become richer and the poor become poorer, because the only place they can create financial ability or push more money to the system to expand it by taxing us, by taxing you, by taxing people. That's why the average people are having a harder and harder time. The only way to escape this system and what is coming is, again, the communist of light and sharing and people coming together. Therefore, they don't need as much resources and wanting the, what they want themselves, but sharing with one another. Therefore, that group, those people who share, we're not going to be affected as much with this system. The more you stay by yourself, the more you stay out there, and you think you are making it by yourself, the more wrong you go. Because the time is up. That's another push of God to those who are still hanging back there and they think they're going to make it by themselves. You can't. You have to come together. You have to share. You have to create an environment that you can become more and more independent from that external world and dependent on each other, and therefore you can survive this coming of the great upheaval, even financially. You know, it's not only earthquakes and the warming of the earth and melting of the North Pole and South Pole and the raising of the water and typhoons and hurricanes and all the destruction which is coming. It's in all levels. It's when God works and say, this is my prophet and I'm sending your message. He's not kidding. I'm just trying to get this to everybody's mind and brain. He is not kidding. He is calling everyone to realize what is happening. And in 50 years, the whole system that they thought is going to be forever is bursting from its seams. The reason is that it's God's will, but also it has logical explanation that the governments, the business people, the leaders, none of them know and none of them want to listen to this logical explanation. They are continuing and thinking it's going to work, it's going to work. Yeah, if I throw that couple of trillion dollars on it, it's going to manifest. It won't. I'm telling you now, it will not work. Again, I know a lot of people say, no, don't say these negative things. Make me very fearful, and your teaching and your news brief, and all is too negative and calling for destruction. But that's what is coming. If you want to put your head into the snow and think because you don't see anything, nobody sees you, that's what the quail does. When the winter you want to go hunting them, they put their head inside the snow, and because they don't see you, they think you don't see them either. But of course you see them, their body is outside. You go and shoot them easily. That's what's happening to a lot of people. It's like they're putting their head inside the snow or whatever they are or whatever they want to believe. And all this science is amazing. It's just science all over the place. And they don't want to see it. Okay, sure, fine. Go ahead. But I'm here to tell you the truth. I'm just here to put it on the table as it is. And that's the way it is. I hope you all read the comments I put for the American Indian prophecies in this month's news brief. And read the Bible, read the Quran. Just meditate to see what God has been sending to humanity. What is the end of man? Are Native Americans are correct? There have been four times that human have created and they were okay in the beginning. And then suddenly at the end, they became greedy and unnatural and put God out in every level of their lives, and then they wonder why all this bad thing is happening to us. That's why. And I think it's going to get worse. Another thing amazing about what I found in these prophecies, we are in the right place on earth. Native Americans believe the land between Grand Canyon and Rio Grande are the places that God said are the safest place to be of the coming of these tribulations. of course, was saying that, but even they are saying the same thing. This is the safest place to be. But coming here alone is not going to be enough. You're going to be safe. But you are here, you are good-hearted and a part of God's way, you're going to be safe. Of course, coming here and creating problem for the mission and not being a part of the mission, I don't think that's going to work either. It's your heart. It's your progress and unity with God that will save you. Therefore, yes, indeed, the financial situation is a part of God's way. But in the coming of the kingdom, the Paravipras know how to deal with this situation. If we had the Paravipra government at this time, they would have distribute the wealth to the people and encouraged and manifested great creativity that was in the beginning of finding the United States. The reason there was so much creativity was released in this country was it was virgin, it was open. Creativity was encouraged and everybody came here, had the ability to manifest and bring great discoveries. Can you do that anymore? Even if you have good ideas, you have to sell it to a big company. You can't do it yourself anymore. So we can see the time is up. Humans think they are smart and clever and they can create their own society and everything else. And then we will see at the end their ways always backfires. They always destroy them if they put God out and become unnatural. When humans become unnatural, they eventually will hurt themselves. They're not going to hurt God. So yes, indeed, in answering your question, yes, it is a part of the tribulation. I don't think the leaders or people in power are ready to hear what the solution is. Around 20% of humanity have more than 90% of the resources. And they are pretty comfortable. I don't care if you and me are not comfortable. And if the middle class is being pushed to the brink, the only thing they care is, how can I make more money from the money I have? And that's our limit. You can't go forever. That's when the Paravipras come in. They create a way to distribute the wealth back to people. And that will stimulate their creativity and make a dynamic social movement that will benefit human in the long run. This system will not, because this is getting too fat, too big, too expanded, can't go anywhere anymore but down. I hope that answered your question, but I don't think the Charlie Rose is gonna invite me to tell him this thing in his program, because probably his rating gonna go very low with that. Okay, if you have any follow-up, go ahead. Okay, go ahead.
The next question. A question came to mind about receiving a major organ from a donor. Are there any energies from the donor's organ that are also transferred to the recipient? And if so, can they affect their thinking and actions? Since it has to be kept alive for a certain amount of time and then is transferred, it puzzles me.
The question is, organ donor, heart, liver, kidney, many other things. Now they even do the face. Is it going to affect the person who receives it? Why do you think it's going to affect a person by transferring organs? Have you had an experience with someone?
Salam Maitreya Ji and all. Yes, I had asked the question because I had a stepson who just had a liver transplant, and I was thinking about that question myself, knowing that it is an organ, and I don't know. I was just confused about it myself, whether it has, if it carries. I know everything is God and all is God, but I'm wondering if there's any energies in that organ that still, since it still lives in the body, how it affects. I don't know. I'm just curious as to how it affects the person that receives it, if it does affect it at all.
Anybody else has any experience with that, or have seen people been affected with the transplants?
Salom, yes, I have. I have seen people affected by organ transplant, like they either have some change of mood, or sometimes like claim that they remember things of the donor, or I had experiences like personally around here, or I also see some studies done on this. I watched some documentaries on this also.
What the documentary said?
Well, the documentaries, of course, are not approaching it from a spiritual angle, but they are strictly usually like scientific. In some cases, the body fight against the organ. As you know, you all probably know, but it's just like the documentary I watched, where like is it real? Is there any mysticism to it? And they were just asking questions but not really answering it. So,
when you have a transplant, you have to take some medicines not to let the body reject it. It's just like a heart transplant. And this is true for any organ transplant, even kidney, correct? Anyone who knows?
Yes, true. The immune system of the body fights against the transplant, so they give some medication to somehow like take your immune system out. So in fact, the person that receives the organ, you sometimes become so vulnerable to other like diseases or things, or sometimes could get infections. So they watch it very carefully.
So if it was a natural thing, why do we need to take some medicine and force the body to accept an organ? Doesn't that seem to a little unnatural?
Well, modern medicine is most of the time not so unnatural.
Okay, with all this introduction and question and answer, what do you think? Go ahead, Noor.
Well, my best guess would be, it seems to me like, you know, the soul stays with the body of the donor. It doesn't move with the organ, and the organ could have some energy in it, some prana, but the Rajaguna is, you know, the energy of the universe is inherently neutral. It's made positive or negative by the things that are around it. So my best guess would be that the organ could carry some energies with it, but that they would be neutral and change depending on the situation. And that, you know, since the, but and that would be spiritually, but then physically, you know, as we were talking about, since the organ is unnaturally, you know, it's not, the body doesn't accept it as natural, then negative effects occur. But that would be my best guess, and it really is just a guess.
Okay, so you're saying it's okay to do it, to have donor organ and transplants?
No, I didn't mean that at all. I was trying to analyze it from how I understood, like, energy. But that definitely doesn't mean that it's a good thing. No, I don't agree with that.
Okay, let me pose this question. Why we end up having dysfunctional liver or any organs? What happens that we have had this thing? Go ahead, Kyosha.
It's coming to me to sum it up in one word, dis-ease.
This is what?
Just dis-ease, and in other words, not in tune with something has gone out of whack.
Okay, well, let's look at it this way. If humans live naturally in nature, they eat organic or not food that is affected with commercial greed from the local area, meditate, do yoga, be in tune with God, live in the comings of light, and then when the time comes that they have to leave their body, like that American Indian or Native American says, this is a good day to die, and goes and lie down and leave the body. Or a person has been mentioned, alcohol abuse, substance abuse, family abuse, social abuse, air pollution, and all the unnatural things which happening to them, and their life is selfish and self-centered, and they have no godliness in them, destroy their organs, and then come and demand that society pay for this transplant. Even their existence after receiving a transplant and spending so much on drugs and keeping not to reject the transplant, they continue their selfish way. Is that kosher? Who's going to pay for all that expenses? Yeah, exactly. Shaki. Even in that case, we can see it can be from knowledge. It can be from passion, it can be from ignorance. If a person who lives godly, he tries to eat locally, organically, help people, create environment that a lot of people are changing to godliness, or helping a lot of people with all the precautions and goodness, suddenly create or has such a disease that he needs a transplant, and the people who love him or her are willing to pay for it, then is this a burden on the society? Eventually there have to be some criteria for whatever we do. There have to be a godly way to figure out, is it good to do or not good to do? There is a point of diminishing return. Even in economy, there is a point that you don't invest. You don't spend your time. You don't spend your money. Because no matter how much you put into it, it doesn't return as much as you should. Yes, in a very a specific rare occasion society or people might decide they're willing to do it, to pay for it, or to support it. In other occasions, they decide not to. But if it become a rule that everybody can get it, and the middle class who pays the tax pay for it, again the burden is on middle class and people who work hardest to live, because those who have the money, they have already passed a lot of laws, they don't pay much of a tax. Or the poor doesn't have any money, pay tax anyway. So again, middle class is going to be pushed to the brink. No wonder a lot of middle class these days like to reach a point that they want the government to support them and they stop going to work, because they realize that's easier way to live than working for a year and 3 months of your work goes to our taxes. I mean, you work 3 months, one-fourth of your work for these people who want it free. Does this transplant affect the person? Let's just solve the problem, said, okay, we have money, everybody can have it. If it was natural, God would have created it in such a way that anybody could transfer their organ to anybody they wanted, and it, there wouldn't be any complication or rejection of the organ, and you wouldn't need to take medicine to force the body to accept something. Body says, it's not kosher, I don't want it, it's different, it's not mine, it's affecting me, I wanna gonna reject it. That's what nature is saying to the body. It says, I don't want this thing, what is this? It's different than mine, it has different energy, it has been given different food, nutritionally it is defective, it's not the way my body has been grown up and used to. I don't want it. And now we are saying, no, you have to have it. We are going to force you to have it. So right there you can see it's not natural. If it's natural, it affects you. Anything which is not natural affects your moods, affects your mind, probably affects your personality. Probably it's a good idea to have some study done of these people before they have the transplant and after. See what's the difference. Are they going to be different or not? I have a feeling they will. It's going to affect them. And I have a feeling the closer the family bound is and genetically they are close to each other, the less rejection going to be there and the effect is going to be less than a person that you never knew and they have different kind of lifestyle and suddenly the organ comes and you use it. So it's something has to be done very rarely in this environment. In the kingdom, people know they're going to be reincarnated. They know they're going to get a better body that is theirs, that's not going to be rejected, it's from God. They're going to come back. Why push it? At the same time, in the community, they will eat nutritional food, they meditate, they do yoga, prayer, and they will be healthy. It will come a time that they know it's time for them to go. They prepare themselves for the finality, and when the time comes, they go peacefully, without being too attached to this external world, and change a lot of things in their body. And at the end, eventually, they're going to go anyway. There is an age that no matter what you do, the law of the diminishing return applies. Human is logical, believe in God, reincarnation, detached, have a placid or clear mind. They make decision for every case, and if the case is for a person whose continuation of the life will benefit many, maybe the decision would be yes, it's worth the expenses, we will pay for it, and it's done. It's not going to help him to help other people, or again, it's going to be a diminishing return for the expenses paid for, then the decision was no, we're going to let him go or her go, and we pray for him or her, and we wait for them to come back. And we recognize when they come back, and we choose them to continue their work, and then even they benefit the humanity in a greater degree. Because they're young, they are passionate, they can do it, and they can help humanity or people around them or whatever, and therefore it's worth it. Or maybe not. So it's a complicated topic, politically incorrect, and the truth of it is, it depends. It can be from the knowledge, from passion, or from ignorance, like everything else. Your answer is yes, it does. It affects the person, but it is much deeper than just transplant. It goes with comings of light, good environment, nutritional value, and creating a place that the healthy people continue to live a long life, and when the time comes, they have no hesitation to leave the body because they know they will return. So this attachment and fear that exists in humanity at this time is not there. They're hanging to life with the dear life just like they created it. They give it to themselves. And they do not thank God for it. I hope that answers your questions. I'm concerned for all of you. This call is not just a call. It is serious. It's happening and will happen. And the more you and humanity resist, the harder it's going to be to stop this destruction. The more humanity listen and come and join and help, the destruction going to be smaller or not as bad as it's been predicted. But one thing for sure, the kingdom of God will come to earth, and we have all the answers humanity needs. Salam everyone. Have a wonderful Feast of Tabernacle. Enjoy it, love it, and be one with it. I'll be here again 2 days from now. We continue the question that have been sent to us and the question in the room. If you have questions to send ahead of time, they usually will be answered in a deeper level because I will have time to meditate on them before I come to the room. Have a good Feast of Tabernacle. See you in 2 days. Salam, everyone.